Chance right here. Shot clock is off.
Second and goal at the one. The quarterback is in the shotgun formation.
The crowd will tell you what happens.
From the gridiron.
Right side, caught by Diggs. Stay alive! Oh my God!
To the hardwood.
Oh, blocked by James!
Through the highs and the lows of games.
Breeze from the gun, takes the snap, goes to the near side. Oh, here, where's the flag? An unbelievable no call.
The roar of the crowd has always been the soundtrack for sports and some of our greatest memories.
Kawhi up top, looks at the clock, turns a corner for the win!
But what happens when the crowd goes silent? Today, with a select few sports back in action, and the return of Major League Baseball and the NBA on the horizon, we talk to players and broadcasters to try to answer the question, what will sports sound like in 2020, and what does it mean for athletes and fans? I'm Mina Kimes. It's Friday, July 17th. This is ESPN Daily. Hey, Brian.
How's it going?
Brian Curtis covers sports media and broadcasting for The Ringer. We've talked to a lot of people over the last, months, which is terrifying, about what it's going to be like to play sports, what the competition will be like. But we haven't talked that much about what it's going to be like to watch sports without fans. What do you think is the biggest unknown at the moment?
Ooh, I think there's a bunch. But I think what it's going to sound like is the thing that people in the industry are most worried about. Because you can sort of shoot a game very tightly and pretty much take out the stands and just show us the plays on the field. But the sound is going to be weird if there's not a crowd in the stadium.
We've had a little preview of what it might be like in the States, because there have been games in other parts of the world and we have heard the sort of fake crowd noise. How has that been received?
I think pretty well. It probably varies customer to customer. I know in the UK, they offer you an option to turn it off actually on your television. Here you have to do that through streaming. So I think it may become kind of like a megacast kind of thing. Like, would you like your fake crowd noise? Please press yes. And if not, please turn to channel 321 where you will get the game in its purest form.
From a technical perspective, how does this all work?
So sports TV turns out to be very technologically cool and sophisticated. And also, as I said, really analog at the same time. So if we're playing Madden, for instance, which I think is like one of the things that some of these networks and even the NFL has looked at to how can we do fake crowd noise, there is a computer that is picking the right sound based on the right scenario, right?
Looking to throw Trubisky on first down.
Well, if you're in a TV truck outside a stadium, you have a person doing that, just like the director who's picking the right picture off the screen for the particular play, right? So you're going to have a person that's going to have a few dozen options, maybe. For soccer, we've seen goal scored. We've seen whistle when there's a penalty on the home team, that kind of jeering whistle. We've seen, you know, get mad, a little bit of a kind of angry murmur kind of thing. So you're going to have all these options. And then you just have to pick it in the moment and put that into the telecast, essentially.
What incredible power. Right. I mean, you could do an MVP chant. You could do boos. I mean, so much control.
The one I hope we get to is the ironic cheer when the home team gets its first down, like 2 minutes into the second quarter. I want us to be able to recreate that sound.
Well, it's such a difficult balance, right? Because you want to have a light touch, but you can't have nothing at all. I mean, we have seen games or heard games with nothing at all. There was the famous Orioles game in 2015 after the death of Freddie Gray that was played without fans. And in 1989, there was actually a college basketball game between Siena and BU to decide who would go to the tournament that was also played without fans because of an outbreak of the measles.
All right, we're ready for the opening tip here. And I guess there's no crowd to stand on his feet.
What is the experience of watching a game without fans like?
it just sounds like you're playing sports inside a submarine. You're just like, what's going on? Why am I not hearing anything?
Yeah.
And I think also hearing those announcers completely divorced, right, from the crowd, because they love to surf off the crowd too. And hearing them try to recreate emotions without that background noise is really strange.
Do you think this will affect the way the Joe Bucks and Mike Breens of the world call games?
Those guys at that level are so good. And, you know, at this point, just so experienced with it that I think their call will probably sound fairly similar. I think in a way it will expose a talent gap, right, between the very, very best announcers and people who need other elements to make their game call sound good, right? But need the crowd to kind of cue them for what kind of reaction to do. Because remember, all these guys are sort of watching a play. And in that moment, they're sort of figuring out in their mind, how amazing is this, right? Do I need to go to 10 amazing or do I need to go to like 7.5? And the crowd sort of helps them with that, right?
Watson, pressure off the edge. Watson survives it and then checks down to Jones. Jones inside the 40, inside the 30, inside the 20, to the 10-yard line. Deshaun Watson, magical.
Well, if you don't have the crowd, then announcers who may be, let us say, less skilled than the absolute top of the profession are trying to figure that out on the fly. And that could be kind of weird.
I wanted to find out how elite announcers prepare for fanless broadcasts, so I decided to ask one. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mina. How are you?
Mike Breen is the lead NBA announcer for ESPN. So, Mike, before we get into these upcoming games and what they're going to sound like, which is what we're talking about today, I want to talk to you about what games normally sound like, right? And the role that you and everyone else typically plays in a broadcast, starting with the fans, because obviously there's not going to be fans at these games. What is the normal role of fans in a typical broadcast?
They have a pretty important role in a lot of ways. The way you handle calls and the way you talk on broadcast often has to do with crowd reaction. You know, especially when the crowd's going crazy, you know, you don't want to be trying to scream over the crowd noise. It's also a very effective way of giving the viewer a feel of the excitement by letting the crowd take over.
Anthony for three. Puts it in! Knicks by one with 8.2 remaining!
It's going to be just so completely different. Now, you know, there are times, too, that crowds have chants that they go that become part of the broadcast because they're chanting something that is either have something to do with the game or something to do with a player. And you take your cue from that, and it's something that you need to address.
An anti-Draymond chant here in Cleveland as Thompson hits the second.
You really do take your cue off them a lot. And that's why this is going to be such an intriguing thing for all of us, because it's something really none of us have ever had to do.
So what is the plan for the crowd noise in these new broadcasts?
Well, they haven't come up with anything definitive yet. You know, every NBA game has music in every arena. So, you know, I think clearly we're going to have the music go on. Every NBA game has, you know, a PA announcer. So you're going to hear that. I know they've talked about that they put in crowd noise. Now, I think they're going to try and experiment. There's some scrimmages that each team is going to play. So they'll experiment with the sound during that. Then the regular season games, they'll probably experiment more until they kind of figure it out, because nobody knows exactly what's going to work. Nobody knows, you know, exactly how they're going to do it. And you have to go in knowing that it's not going to be the same. It's not going to be perfect. Not everybody's going to be happy, but you try and just figure out what's the best way to make it seem as normal as possible, keep the game as important as possible, and somehow maintain that incredible excitement level that is normal there for the playoffs.
Will you be there?
Yes. As of now, that's the plan. I'm going to head down, and we won't be courtside, which is our normal location. We'll probably be, you know, anywhere from 15 to 20, 25 rows up, which isn't a bad thing, because it's, you actually, the vantage point, when you go a little higher, you get to see the court a little bit better. You know, we always worry when we're up a little higher, oh, you won't be able to hear the players and the coaches and the refs. Well, I think we're going to be able to hear the players and the coaches and the refs. And I think that's going to be a really important part of the telecast, Mina, in, you know, having, you know, coaches are mic'd, refs are mic'd, and we get some players to be mic'd. I think we'll see more or hear more of that. It's such a fascinating part of the game, and I know fans love that, that we've got to figure a way as a broadcast to bring as much of that as possible. And I have a feeling this is going to be part of my role. If that means I have to pull back and talk less, I will.
That's fascinating, because I actually would have thought you'd be talking more, right, on account of the lack of crowd noise.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, while the ball is in play, there'll probably be some of that. And, you know, to counter, you know, the silent ambiance, so to speak, I think there'll be certain instances where we might talk now where we wouldn't in the past. But I also think, you know, there's just something about hearing the you know, the sneakers squeaking, the ball bouncing, guys calling out screens, coaches calling from the sidelines. If you can capture some of that, if that does truly come through for the viewer at home, then I think it would be important for us to talk a little bit less.
How do you think all of this will impact your interactions on camera with your colleagues on air, you know, Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy?
The three of us, on a personal note, we don't like each other, so it'd probably be good if we're socially distanced. You know, we managed to get along on the air okay, but it's going to be, you know, I'm sure with Jeff and Mark, they'll have fun with whatever the setup is. You know, I don't know if we're going to be right next to each other with a partition between us. I don't know if we're going to be 6 feet apart. But you know, you do, and you bring up an interesting question, because often when you're sitting close together and you're doing a telecast, I might be doing something and I might not see something off the ball, and Mark will tap me, or Jeff will tap me to, you know, to point that a coach just got hit with a technical, or, you know, some other thing that's happening at on another side of the court while I'm watching where the ball is. So a lot of that nonverbal communication does aid a broadcast. Now that we don't have that, I think eye contact is obviously going to be critical, but that's just another adjustment that you're going to do. But they still haven't told us exactly what the setup is going to be.
They do have a timeout. Decide not to use it. Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry! With 0.6 seconds remaining.
Do you think a bang call will still work without fans?
That's a good question. I'm sure if it's not working, I'm sure I'll hear about it very quickly. All I know is I'm so desperate just to say that word on the air, because I miss the league so much that I might say it on an opening layup in the first minute, for crying out loud.
I look forward to that layup and a dramatic bang and then absolute silence. Thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate it.
Oh, Mina, my pleasure. Really, really nice talking to you.
All right, so we talked about what the game is going to sound like at home. Coming up, how it's going to sound on the field in the court.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way, or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
With two, with one, three for the win. It's good! It's wow. Good! Sue Bird with a three ball straight away, and the ball game is over!
With three WNBA titles, two NCAA championships, and four Olympic gold medals, Sue Bird knows how to ignite a crowd. But when she takes the floor for her 17th WNBA season next Saturday, it's going to sound very different. So, Sue, what are your thoughts on playing without fans and sort of the absence of sound? How is that going to affect you?
I mean, it's going to be weird. To me, it's more the home court advantage that you usually get, or if you're like on the road, that affects you. like that, those, that's meaningful. That impact it has on you, both good or bad, depending on who you are, home or away, that's like meaningful. So I'm more interested to see how that kind of plays out. It, you might have different teams do better, to be honest, without the fans. Like I remember for a long time, our coach would be like, all right, guys, we want to win every game at home. Like that's our goal. And we want to go 500 on the road. So now it's like, there is no road. So, you know, maybe some team, and then notoriously some teams do, I mean, you guys watch games. It's like, oh, you know, the LA Sparks, for some reason, they're doing better on the road than they are at home. Like the fans do change. Like, I guess like the chemistry of a game. So I'm more interested in that part than I am like the actual noise, but I've been watching some soccer, you know, usually I'm forced into it and they're doing the fan noise in the background. And it, I don't know, it's on TV. It sounds pretty legit. One time our coach was helping prepare us for like a big tournament we were going to on the road. And so they played crowd noise during our practice. And I got to say, you just kind of get lost in it. You don't necessarily realize it's not actual people.
So you wouldn't mind them actually piping in noise into the arena?
Oh, I hope they do.
Really?
I mean, this is just my opinion. I'm assuming they're going to. I just don't know how they're going to do the home and away thing.
Right. Like no one's going to get an advantage, right? Basically. You're all going to get the same.
Exactly. So it's like,
oh God,
everyone.
That was terrible.
I know.
Sorry. I was trying to approximate a drone. I don't know. That was awful.
That's funny.
All right. So hopefully any artificial crowd noise will be better than that. But the questions surrounding piped in crowd noise do raise some interesting dilemmas. Namely, every sport is different in terms of how the crowd responds to the players. And every sport's going to have to find its own individual solution.
The NBA is interesting because the NBA already kind of has its own audio track.
Once again, the Ringer's Brian Curtis.
If you sit in an NBA stadium, there's lots of music going on while the ball's in play, totally different than baseball and football. The NFL is basically divided between purists who look at this idea of adding something like that and kind of cringe, and then some producers that are really excited about it. The same producers who are trying to create the next yellow line for a first down, right? They're saying, oh, this is just something new, and we can figure this out just like we figured everything else out.
What about baseball?
So here's the cool part about baseball. And ESPN tried this during spring training, which now seems like 1 billion years ago this year. But they put mics on the outfielders and other players during the game.
Top of the fourth. This is Anthony Rizzo speaking. Oh, I got it. Get over. I'm going to make the play. Girl, turn in the chest.
Sorry.
I had a ball
chest.
Like that. Yeah, that was pretty good. That's key, though, in the chest.
Here's the weird part about baseball. It's slow. And you may be able to interview someone, if the players agree, right, during gameplay. That's not nuts. Like, they do that during the All-Star game all the time. And to me, baseball, of all these sports, would really encourage that. And I think you would get guys that were really into it.
Is America ready for the mic'd up Astros, though? Is the rest of the league ready for that?
I was going to say, it's the mic catching what opposing players are saying to the Astros. Woo!
What are some of the ideas being explored by broadcast networks right now to help them to add more noise aside from the crowds to these broadcasts?
So a couple of different things, right? You could sort of megacast lots of these games, right? And I think the other one is just like, how do you find sound on the field, right? So do you mic up players? Maybe. Maybe they want to do that. Maybe they don't. Do you give sideline reporters like a lot more agency and let them kind of run around and say, okay, you can interview Tom Brady once a quarter on the sideline. Now, will that be great? I don't know. But now you can only talk to him after the game, right? But you get like two questions with them at the end of every quarter. And would that sort of provide a kind of soundtrack that we're lacking?
We tried that with the XFL and players, you know, some of them didn't want to be interviewed during games after they missed a field goal.
Yeah, but, right, there was that famous Matt McGloin one.
What adjustments do you want to make for your play? Well, I think we need to make a lot of adjustments, make a lot of changes. To be honest with you, this is probably one of the worst games I've ever been a part of, you know, offensively. There's a lot of stuff going on behind closed doors. You know, I think we need to clean that up. Communication especially is one. And it showed today.
That might have been the greatest sideline interview of all time. Right? Now, most guys are not going to go off message like that. I think they'll sound more like some of the golfers we've seen over the last couple of weeks, where they're very on message. But still, it's something, right, to break up the broadcast.
I think people don't understand, or a lot of people aren't aware of how mic'd up, for example, actually works. They think they're getting the noise in real time. And Brian, as you remember, this came up during the infamous moment where Sam Darnold said, "I'm seeing ghosts out there," while playing the Patriots. You know, that was a decision made. The NFL gives us the sound and lets us hear it. But in this situation, if you had all the players mic'd up, I'm not sure how that would be possible.
Yeah, and Sam Darnold and the Jets got really mad, right, when they put that on the broadcast because it was too interesting. Sam Darnold just going, let's go, we're not out of this game. He actually said something really revealing, and all of a sudden his coach was like, let's never do that again. Let's never, ever put that in a broadcast.
It's that push and pull between what fans want to be able to hear at home and what players and coaches are comfortable letting them hear. That's ultimately going to drive so much of what this new moment in sports will sound like. To get the athlete's perspective, I checked in with a player for whom communication on the field is vitally important. Hey, JC.
How you doing?
I'm doing very good. I am hoping we have football.
I think we all are.
JC Treader is the starting center for the Cleveland Browns. You play a position that I think is uniquely affected by the presence, or potentially here, the absence of sound. Can you explain how a crowd noise actually affects you during a football game?
Yeah, I think the quarterback and the center are the two most vocal players on offense. Having to make calls and checks and communication is so important.
What's that? What's that? Hey, Mike, 4-2. What's that?
Not only between the two of them, but the way they communicate with the rest of the guys on the field. Those road games, first off, in the communication, it's tough to get your calls down the line and make sure everybody knows where your point is, who we're going to, what their assignments are.
What's been the worst or most challenging or adverse situation you've been in noise-wise?
It's always tough when, you know, a check needs to be made as the play clock's rolling down. You're trying, you know, just to yell out the call and make sure everybody hears it, but you really need to go from center to the guards, and the guards echo it to the tackles, and the tackles echo it to the tight ends if they're in line. And that's a process that kind of needs to take place in all that noise.
You alluded to the amount of communication that happens on an offensive line that, you know, fans at home don't usually hear. Now we might actually hear it. Does that weird you out?
Yeah, I think we'll have to probably roll through more calls than usual. Most teams track what calls get picked up on the TV copy to make sure there's nothing that teams can pick up and understand from just watching the game. So that's definitely going to be a bigger concern, a bigger issue that we'll have to probably rotate through calls and change our calls, you know, every couple of games. That's just going to have to happen. But I think the hardcore football fans, it might be kind of an interesting one-off year to kind of hear every little thing that's said on the line of scrimmage and the communication that makes you feel like you're kind of part of the conversation almost.
Based on my experience being on the field during games, I'm not sure fans should hear everything.
The person in the in the truck outside, we'll probably need to have a quick button push with all the bleeps or blank noises that have to be blocked out. You might not be able to understand anything that's going on in the conversation. So that might be the tough part of that idea.
We've heard in the past of teams piping in crowd noise at practice to prepare for, you know, super loud fans. How do you think you guys will prepare for no fans?
I mean, just thinking about it, obviously the quarterback will probably have to be more focused on being quiet and not, you know, making the calls loud in the huddle, because the, you know, the defense is 4 yards away and usually with noise can't really hear what's being said. But in practice, you can hear everything what the other side's saying. And I think that's going to have to be almost a relearned process of how to almost say the call loud enough for the guys a foot away from you to hear, but not for the guys 10 feet away from you to hear.
We talked about the strategic impact, but what about the psychological impact? How do you think that might affect you guys?
I think people are going to have to bring their own energy. And a lot of times you rely on that home field advantage of the fans pumping you up and giving you that energy when you need a big stop, or you need to make a big play, or even after you make a big play, then continue that momentum on the kickoff and then the defense coming in. That's going to be different.
What have you been hearing from guys on defense? Because obviously for you, this is in some ways a benefit, but for them, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, they love being able to pin their ears back, and they understand. I think it's easier for them to jump counts on silent because they can almost time it up. But also, I think, you know, getting the crowd noise for defense especially is a huge advantage, and it's a huge benefit. And I think the defense will have to almost bring their own energy more so than in the past to try to carry that emotion forward.
What do you think it's going to feel like running out of the tunnel?
It'll be kind of eerie, I'd say, just going out there and, you know, now I'll be going into my eighth year. It's almost like a pattern, and it's kind of the first step to getting out on the field to start. You run out of that tunnel and you hear the fans and the roar, and you get those butterflies and the goosebumps.
Your 2019 team!
There'll be no kind of rush running onto the field, I don't think, that you would usually get with a crowd of 60, 70,000 people cheering for you.
What do you think you'll miss the most?
Not having my family there. My family makes it out to most games, especially the home games. They make it to almost all of them. And there's always that moment before the game that, you know, as you're running in, either before you come out for the final time, you kind of look up and either give them a wave or you make eye contact. That'll be different.
That and the one guy who heckles centers.
Right. Who maybe is part of my family. I've never turned around to look, but that could be a family member.
Thanks so much, JC.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
It's now been 129 days since sports shut down across the country. And while many sports have come back, several major leagues, the NBA, NHL, and MLB, are about to join this massive experiment. We'll see or hear how it works. Coming up, the man who controls the fate of the NFL's elite.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Here's another story I want you to know. Today is a day that virtual NFL GMs wait for all summer. The annual release of this season's player ratings for Madden NFL 21. Clint Oldenburg is a former NFL player, an offensive tackle who last suited up for Washington in 2011. He now has a different job in sports, and an unusual one. He joined us to explain what he does for Madden and why it draws the attention and occasional ire of the NFL's elite.
By day, I am the Madden NFL gameplay producer, and my weekend and evening job is a member of the Madden ratings adjusters team.
How'd you get that job?
The first step is you have to be employed by Electronic Arts in some capacity. And then the second criteria is have an unusual passion for the game of football, specifically NFL football. And as you know, I came to the job with that passion as my former career. So we put together a team of people that's sole focus is doing the ratings for the NFL players. We have 8 to 10 people who are in this. We like to call it an after school club, for lack of a better term. But that's what we do with our weekends. We watch as much football as we can and get to know these players as well as we can.
I feel like that's one of those dream jobs that kids have, like ice cream taster, like Madden ratings adjuster has to be up there.
Yeah, true.
So as I mentioned earlier, of course, you were an NFL player. What do you remember about your ratings from your own playing days?
I was not a highly rated player. So the last year I was in Madden was Madden 12. And I was the backup right tackle for Washington. I was a 64 overall. I was actually pretty happy with my strength rating. I had an 86 for my strength, but my awareness was a 61. Mm. And I was always known as a player as more of a cerebral player. So I was a little hurt about that. So when I joined the EA team, the first thing I did was go talk to the gentleman who did the ratings at the time and had a discussion about why he rated me the way that he did. You know, what he told me was fine. It appeased me and I joined the team and it was fine. But yeah, I wasn't a highly rated player.
I feel like Madden 12 was one of the Brady peak years. I could be totally wrong.
I think all the years are Brady peak years.
That's fair. So let's discuss your actual job and what it entails. You go to watch players in action live and then adjust your ratings based on what you see. So what is a typical game day like for you?
Get to the field as early as you can. We want to be on the field as soon as they open it up for media access because we want to see the players out there as much as we can. And if possible, we want to even have conversations with them. So anything we pick up, if a guy's, you know, spending more time warming up, may have a little injury to be aware of. You know, one of the crazier stories, I was on the sideline once and got in a conversation with the kicker. And he told me, you know, today our game plan is not to kick it deep. We want them to return the ball, so I'm going to be kicking it short. So don't downgrade my kick power rating next week. So that stuff is really gold for us.
And then as far as the adjustments, I'm not sure everybody knows that the ratings are adjusted as the season goes on. What does that part entail?
Basically, we are acting as you would expect an internal scout for an NFL team to act. We put out a live update for all the ratings in the game every Thursday because we're trying to reflect in our game what's going on in the real world NFL. The best example of this from 2 years ago was none other than Patrick Mahomes himself. Coming off his rookie year, he hadn't played more than a game or two. He was still a little bit of an unknown, but had a lot of potential coming out of Texas Tech. And he just absolutely exploded onto the scene. So I believe he started the season as a 74 overall. And by the time the season was over, he was already in the high 90s because he continued to play well over and over. His ratings just kept going up every single week.
How cognizant are most players of their ratings?
I think by and large, they're very cognizant of their ratings. And they certainly let us know about it. That rating is one of the many things that contribute to what you would refer to as clout. You know, in pop culture nowadays, and the higher the rating, the more clout you have.
Do they ever reach out to you?
Absolutely. Yes. The first thing they say is, how do you arrive at that rating? And then we'll give some evidence based on film study or statistical data. And then typically the story is, well, here's why that is false or incorrect. And if a player has a case, you know, we'll go back and look. And that's another reason why we update them every week. But I was on site doing some head scanning in a facility where we capture the player's face so we can reflect the face correctly in the game. And a special teams player walked in and informed me he was not going to be participating in the face scan because he was very upset how low his tackle rating was. He basically yelled at me all the way down the hallway as he walked out of the room and just said, you know, I'm not participating. You guys got me all wrong. Another case, which was one of my favorites, I tell this story all the time, was, you know, Cam Newton a couple of years ago after he had had foot surgery, he came and visited us in Orlando at our studio. And he wanted to know how the game was made. And the first thing he did was look at his ratings. And he said, why you got my speed rating so low? And, you know, we looked down and he still had his walking boot on from his surgery. And we said, you know, look down, you know, that's why your speed rating's low. And he was ready to basically go out in the parking lot and take that walking boot off and show us that he could still run.
Didn't Leonard Fournette ask to be taken off the game because he was so upset with his rating at one point?
Yeah, he did. He did at training camp.
It ran a 90 or higher? You might as well just take me off there. I'm not no 87, 88, 89.
But, you know, I think that was kind of heat of the moment thing. And he's still a fan favorite in Madden.
All right, Clint, I'm going to ask you a question that we debated on ESPN on a program that's running tonight on the Madden release. If you were starting a franchise, would you choose Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback in Madden or Lamar Jackson?
You really put me on the spot there. You got our last two cover athletes from Madden 20 and Madden 21. For Madden 21, even though Lamar's on the cover, just by a hair, I'm still going to go with Mahomes. Madden 21 is going to be a little bit more open passing game.
Mm.
We've already revealed a lot of gameplay details about the upcoming game relative to quarterback passing, wide receiver releases, and the like. And I think I want the guy with the big arm this year. Just a little bit.
All right, you take Mahomes. I'll take Jackson. We'll go head-to-head and see who wins.
All right. I'm going to put it on the schedule because Madden 21 drops on August 28th, and we can link up that day for an online head-to-head game.
Thanks so much, Clint.
All right. Thank you, guys. Take care.
For more on the Madden ratings, I will be joining a panel to discuss on a SportsCenter special tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. ESPN Daily is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Mantell, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. Special thanks this week to Pablo Torre, Max Brodsky, Russell Denalo, and Troy Farkas. I'm Mina Kimes, and I will be off for a couple days next week. Pablo Torre will be filling in on Monday.